Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr, Albert Breer's here. We are remarkably refreshed despite the fact that the draft was this weekend and you and I are battling the rigors of youth sports, Albert.
I am, yeah.
We were just talking about this before the show.
This is one of my favorite days of the year, usually Monday after the draft. It's like when we kind of can become more normal human beings for a little bit, you know? become more 9-to-5ers, I guess. But so yesterday, I actually filed my Monday morning quarterback this morning because I ran out of time to do it yesterday because I was at a lacrosse tournament. This lacrosse tournament was an hour and a half away. So we had two teams from our town, two third grade teams from our town. They just split the kids up randomly and have two third grade teams go at it. So three games for each of the two teams. So we have six opponents. Three of the six opponents are within a 15-minute drive of my house. So I essentially drove an hour and a half to go to a tournament to play three teams from 10 minutes away. In addition to that, two of the other teams, we drove through their towns to get to the tournament about halfway, right? And then the other town, the sixth team, if we had stayed on the one highway for two exits longer, we would have been there. Again, still about a half an hour from where the tournament was. So one thing I've learned about youth sports, Connor, is that whenever you're doing something like this, someone is cashing in.
Yes, that's true. We were blown away. We had a Friday night track meet for five-year-old track at 6 o'clock after Friday night at 6 o'clock. And it was funny because I'm like on the fringes of the coaching staff. And so one coach is like, well, we split our kids up by grade. And we're like, well, we split our kids up by age, which is, yep, I feel like what you should do. And so there ended up being no consensus. And so they're like, we're just going to keep splitting them up by grade. And then we're like, well, we're just going to keep splitting them up by age. And then all of a sudden you just have these things like, you know, in the Olympics, there's like that, like Luxembourg, and it's like in the sprint race, you know, and then, yeah, that person is like 11 seconds slower than everybody else. And then you have, yeah, like a legitimate first grader just like beating the brakes off of these kids. Yeah. And I was like, what are we doing? And
so
I made a joke about about a drug testing tent that didn't seem to go over well. So I'm, I don't know if I'm going to be
birth certificate check. Like,
yeah, it's like, this is incredible.
I've run into that too. Like, I've learned. So my oldest plays hockey and football and lacrosse and everything. And he, I've learned that he has a good football birthday, but a bad hockey birthday, because football is by grade and hockey is by birth year. And he was born in October. So he's old for his grade, but near the end of his birth year. So bad hockey birthday, good football birthday.
You got to plan ahead, you know? You gotta plan that stuff out. You know,
I think there actually is like evidence of this, and we're gonna get into the draft in a minute, I promise. I think there is like evidence of like a lot of August and September babies becoming NFL players. There's some, I remember reading something about that. Like there's like a, cause those would be the oldest kids in the grade. You know what I mean?
Oh.
So like, I think there's some evidence somewhere, and I don't know where the cutoff is everywhere else, but the cutoff here is September 1st. And then you have, I mean, I'm not going to crap on it because we sort of did it with our two younger kids. Like they're both August babies. They're the oldest kids in their grade. So you can fudge that a little bit, but I have seen that where it's like August and September babies. There's like a preponderance of them in the NFL.
I always like, it's been the hardest thing that I've had to explain to my kids so far is like, we'll get to a field and whatever. My son is in the 3-year-old multi-sport program or whatever. And my daughter is like mm-hmm. kindergarten, but the disbursement of genetics and then the range of ages is so wide at that point.
Oh, when they're really young, yeah, definitely.
So we have, like, in softball, we have a couple girls who could, like, legitimately turn two on, like, a Major League Baseball field, and then we have kids who, you know, are afraid of the ball. And so right. it's, like, the range of possible outcomes is tremendous. And, like, I just keep trying to explain to them, which no one explained to us, by the way. Like, my dad was never, like, sorry, you just didn't hit the genetic lottery here. You know, it was always like, you're not working hard enough, you know? so I'm trying to, like...
If you work hard enough, anything can happen.
You'll overcome that kid with the mustache and the armpit hair in fourth grade. Yeah. Tough tarts.
It's funny, too. Like, one thing I've had to remind myself is, like, when you become an adult, you forget this. How massive like a 1-year or a 2-year difference is when you're that age.
Yeah.
Like how, like what that feels like to you. You know what I mean? Like the kids, if you're like a second grader, fourth graders are like adults to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So it's definitely, you kind of get to relive all of that stuff when you have kids.
This weekend, man, we did high school or 5-year-old 6 PM track meet. We did the draft. We did daughters bowling alley party, rented out half of a bowling alley. We are just like, we're in recovery mode.
Does the bowling alley have an arcade in it?
Yeah. So
that's one thing I've learned. They all have arcades in them now.
This is the last story I tell, and I'll promise we'll get to the draft. So it had Tomb Raider. And so this is a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old birthday party. And so I'm sitting there and like the kids, nobody wants to wait their turn to bowl. Right.
Yeah.
And so instantly everybody's eyes gravitate to the arcade. And there's a massive Tomb Raider. And so I go over and I get a couple singles from the guy at the front desk. And I'm like, I'm going to be a cool dad. And I just start handing out singles to the kids to play Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And then my wife comes over and she's like, there are kids. Like, you're teaching kids how to, like, reload a rifle and shoot wolves in the face with, like, guns. And then the thought didn't even hit me. And then I was like, oh no. And my daughter's like, yes. And she told me like, that was far and away the best part of her birthday party. And now I mean,
it was worse when we were kids, wasn't it?
What's that?
It was worse when we were kids, wasn't it?
Oh, we had Mortal Kombat and everything. I mean, too.
Grand Theft Auto is like, I mean, like stuff we can't say on this here. I mean,
Grand Theft Auto is bad. Grand Theft Auto is bad. But like Tomb Raider for a 5-year-old is also like not great.
Well, I remember we've talked about the Blades of Steel thing, right? Like we're talking about bad messages. You win the fight and you don't have to go to the penalty box, right? Like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and, you know, I actually like... So my kids, like my oldest is now at the age where he's obsessed with Fortnite and all of his buddies play like he's in third grade. Like they all are obsessed with Fortnite. And I remember one of the other parents telling me, I was like, yeah, I don't know. I just said something along the lines of like, yeah, I don't know. He's just like kind of like running around with a gun on like the screen. Maybe not the best thing for him. And this other dad goes, yeah, but there's no blood. And I'm like, really? And so, like, that's, like, the bar now, is that, like, Fortnite, like, you go around shooting people, but there's no blood, so it's okay.
I feel like that's worse. You're teaching kids that there's no consequence for your actions. Like, there were times in Grand Theft Auto where I felt legitimately horrible for what I had just done, you know? And I do think that there's something for that. You need to create a system of remorse. Speaking of regrets, we are going back over some of the lingering questions from the draft, and we have a real banger to close that Albert brought up in our pre-show meeting, which I think is really good, so stick around for that. But the first one that I want to talk about is one. I mean, obviously, I'm driving around. I'm getting my coffee this morning. Everybody's talking about it on in New York here is the Giants didn't get the quarterback. And the Giants in particular were interesting because they were sandwiched between the first three guys. And then there was the gap. And then there was Penix and McCarthy right after that and Bo Nix. So the Giants had a chance at Penix, McCarthy, and Bo Nix, and they passed. They made a value judgment that, okay, Daniel Jones plus Malik Nabers is better than, you know, maybe whatever you want to say, Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Penix plus nobody. And so that's interesting to me because they have essentially, like, you couldn't get up to three. No one was going to trade that pick. And so what do you do now? And is Daniel Jones coming off a neck issue? Is he going to be enough to to get this done for them?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's sort of interesting the way the teams do this now too, because I think the Vikings, it was almost similar. They tried to get up to three, right? And where they drew the line in the sand was, okay, like, we see Drake May this way, and then we see J.J. McCarthy this way, and J.J. McCarthy plus these assets is more than Drake May. In other words, they're able to go get Dallas Turner. They're able to hold on to their one for next year. And so that's sort of where they drew the line in the sand. Now, the unspoken thing there is clearly there's a gap for them between May and McCarthy. But I think that that's where, like, the argument gets really interesting, right? Like, is how good does a prospect have to be for you to take them in the first round, right? Like, because it's, in a way, like, the Giants didn't settle and the Vikings did, right? You got me there?
I do.
The Giants decided to continue treading water with Daniel Jones at the position where the Vikings were like, we got to get our guy now. And I'm not saying the Vikings don't like J.J. They love J.J., right? But I think that that's what's so fascinating about these decisions. And, like, you look at, like, the biggest question with Mac Jones 3 years ago was not what he's going to be in year one or year two. It's what he's going to be in year five. And so I think J.J. is going to be able, based on the environment around him, to play pretty well right away, right? But in 4 years, are you going to be ready to pay him $50 to $55 million a year? And I think the Giants' decision not to draft J.J. McCarthy was based on that. Whereas this is something the Vikings will probably have to grapple with in a few years.
I imagine that I will come to regret my immediate dislike of the J.J. McCarthy pick. But I do think I'm going to be proven right on the Giants making the value judgment on Nabers, because I don't see this. I don't see this working out long term, and you're going to need to at some point get the answer. The one thing that I keep thinking of, though, in the back of my mind, and you could tell me if this is wrong or if this is crazy, is I love the idea of Brian Daboll and Drew Lock together. And for some reason, like, I've been thinking about this for a couple of weeks now, and I keep thinking, like, that could be a guy that all of a sudden we're sitting
Seattle
here
liked
like
him.
And Seattle liked him too. He's not a bad quarterback, and it could be like this Geno Smith, like, thing where all
that,
of a sudden,
exactly what
you
I
know
was
what
thinking.
I mean?
Did Seattle have two Geno Smiths?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because I remember having this conversation. I think I've probably told this story to you before, Connor, but, like, I remember this conversation walking off the practice field in Seattle, and it's a coach I know pretty well. And, you know, we were talking about Geno, and he said, you know what coaching Geno has done for me is it's made me wonder how many Genos there are out there. Mm-hmm. Like, guys who probably started before they were ready, weren't in good situations, fell on their face, then got the opportunity to sit for 4 or 5 years, and the talent that caused them to be drafted where they were is still there. And now they have, you know, all this development time that they've been able to do without being in the line of fire. So, yeah, I mean, that part of it's interesting. Here's the other nuance to it too, right? And I think this is, like, a really important part of it is, if you draft J.J. McCarthy, that probably means you're not taking another one for 3 or 4 years, probably, right? And so the Giants have effectively kind of, like, stayed loose at the position. You know what I mean? Like, and I sort of think that that's what, and, you know, like, this is, I think, the best example of it. Like, it's sort of what the Chiefs did all those years with Alex Smith was, like, going and getting Alex Smith didn't preclude them from taking a quarterback in the first round, but it did take care of them for the time being.
Yeah.
And they stayed loose for the right opportunity, and they waited, and they were patient, and the right one came along, and boom, you know, they have Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not saying every time a team, like operates that way, you're going to wind up with Patrick Mahomes. That's ridiculous. But like, it does feel like the Giants have done a good job of staying loose at that position. And I actually think like that might be the benefit of the Daniel Jones contract, is that it allows you to, instead of like, in other words, I think the worst place you can be is when you're pigeonholed into a single year where you say, we have to get a quarterback. That's how Christian Ponder goes 12th overall. That's how EJ Manuel goes 16th overall.
Yeah.
It's when you've predetermined we have to get a quarterback this year, right? I think where the success stories come is like when you're sort of surveying the landscape and you've got, you're doing it over a few years, and then when something truly special comes along, you strike, you know?
I wrote this on draft night, and I do believe it to a certain degree. Is like, I think the Bears were the perfect example of that too, where, but here's the thing, you need, and this goes to ownership, right? Owners, and a brief aside, you know, owners screw up everything.
Yeah.
Basically, right? I mean, and especially when it, I mean.
Owners screw up everything, basically. That's that should be your new Twitter bio.
Yeah, I mean, but think about the, if you go up to a lot of the issues.
The last 4 months is Sports Illustrated. Oh, I don't know if we'll have to cut that part out, but I couldn't help myself on that one. Go ahead.
You have to laugh to keep from crying. So, yeah, I mean, but like, I can safely say that for a lot of fans out there, like, let's say you're sitting there in July and you're being like, why the hell isn't my team signed a wide receiver yet? My guess is the GM is like, hey, can I have $4 million to do this? And the owner's just like, you know, not helping, not doing it. Like, all of the GMs and coaches on your favorite teams want to get better.
Right.
The problem is when the guy who controls the money doesn't allow them to get better. And I think, too, ownership in Chicago, like, Ryan Poles almost, he effectively like broke the algorithm where he was like, okay, I'm going to wait a year. And then it's almost like he made himself impossible to fire while also extending his tenure to the point where he could build the thing. So it was equipped for the rookie quarterback. And now everything is set. Like, this team could legitimately make the playoffs in year one if Caleb Williams is anywhere near as good as we think he is. They have two great wide receivers. They have an offensive line infrastructure. The defense is if they play the way that they did at the end of last year, is really good. And so I think that you need that. You both need the political finesse as a GM, but as an owner, you need that ability to recognize that and to say, okay, I need to give these guys a window. I need to give these guys flexibility. Right. Like, the Giants have a great GM and a great coach, no matter what anybody says here, which is the anti-Dable stuff is just bizarre to me in New York. If you give this guy time to develop the roster around him, and then finally, when the position is right, when the time is right, get that quarterback, this team is going to be lights out.
I had a great conversation with Joe Shane about this, and he actually said that's the benefit to having the owner in the building every day.
I mean, the Giants,
it's like, like that when the owner's in the building every day, like, and he can see the plan, he's not going to panic.
Right.
Right. Like, whereas like with certain owners, and I think, you know, people listening out there know if their teams are one of these, when the owner's not there every day, if the owner swoops in once a month and otherwise is like listening to sports radio, well, that's a problem. Right. Right. Like, there might be another owner like that on the other side of,
right down the highway,
a short drive away.
Think about how incredible that is for one second. Like, and again, and I'm not saying it's anyone in particular, but there are, I would say, more than 16 of the 32 owners who do this. And for like, as a fan, I want you to just close your eyes and digest this for a second. They can walk into that building anytime they want, go into any room they want, and ask anybody what they want. And instead, they're just like you. And they're sitting on Twitter, and they're taking tidbits of information, and they're making snap judgments. And then they walk in and tell people who have been building these projects for months to stop what they're doing and to do what someone says on Twitter. And it's totally insane. And that is how the NFL works.
I have actually heard the story of one particular owner who lives locally, and with his team, and has a bit of a drive to the facility. So, Every time he comes into the facility, the guys in the building know that he's going to be listening to sports radio the entire commute. And so they can legitimately turn on sports radio when they know he's coming in an hour ahead of time and guess what they're going to be asked when he comes in.
Can you imagine? It would be great if, like, the owner just, like, walks in and is like...
So sports radio, Mr. Sports Radio caller, you may have a little more power than you actually think you do.
Listen, head coach of the team, who's your Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks? Tell me right now. Right after the break. Back after this.
Yeah. Just tell me why we can't trade Sauce Gardner for Patrick Mahomes. That doesn't make any sense to me.
It is funny, though, like, you know... When you meet people that who are powerful in other businesses, I will say this, right? Like, so in, you know, I do some volunteer work in the charity space. You know, my wife is in a different field, and you'll run into CEOs, people with lots of money, right? And they are conditioned to believe that they understand things on a level that you don't. And so, like, someone will come up to me and be like, you know, like last year was a perfect example. Like, why can't the Giants just get a first round pick for Saquon Barkley? I can't tell you how many really smart people making like tenfold what I'm making were just like, well, why the Giants should just trade him for a first round pick. And I'm like, you can't do that. But that's the battle we're facing. And this is a long way of saying that.
Yeah, like really smart people. I've run into it too. It's, you know, I think most of my friends know to ask me open-ended questions now, like ones that aren't like, you know, suggesting that something ridiculous happens.
Sometimes, like, my wife always looks at me and like she can tell, like, I'll start making a face, like if I'm in a place and somebody, and I'm not, you know, I wrote about this once. I don't want to make it seem like I am above the fan conversation, because I'm like this with Orioles fan, I'm a Notre Dame fan, I'm like that when it comes to those teams too.
I mean, and don't you think that helps you keep in touch with it?
It does help you keep in touch.
I think rooting for Ohio State really helps me stay in touch with it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But there are certain times when someone is like fervently disagreeing with me and like I just want to get out my phone and pull up the contacts list and be like, I asked this guy about it. Don't you think I know what I'm talking about?
I know. And like what gets frustrating is when you see something like that and then all of a sudden like the argument picks up steam.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden 10 people are asking it or 20 people are asking for it. And something that's not true has now been accepted as fact.
Yes.
It happens a lot.
It does happen a lot. But this is a very long way of saying that. I think Thanks, Elon. Yeah. The Giants, did not technically do what they were going to do or what people think they should have done at the quarterback position. But I think my final verdict on this is that I think Drew Lock right now is eons better than a rookie quarterback, no matter what, right? So you're going to get more out of him this year. I like your point that they are flexible in the years ahead. And again, if they liked J.J. McCarthy, they would have taken him. They didn't.
Right. So we can argue about the next year, 2 years from now. And I used to do that a lot. Like, and I've tried to kind of pump the brakes on it a little bit just because, like, Kyler Murray had barely started the year before he became the number one overall pick, right? Joe Burrow, I don't think most people could pick Joe Burrow out of a lineup the year before he became the first overall pick. Jaden Daniels. It's like, what, a fourth rounder at this time last year?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's going to be Shedeur Sanders or Quinn Ewers or Carson Beck or whoever it is, you know?
Someone will get up there,
And like, at that position, the supply of athletes is not going to slow down. You know what I mean? Like, there are going to be guys that are going to come, and there's you just have to be patient and wait for your opportunity. Now, it's tough to say that to somebody whose job security might not last more than a couple of years, you know? But I think that's the advantage of being in a stable place, the sort of place that the Giants are in. And I mean, look, like I do think like at a baseline, like Daniel Jones can give them fine quarterback play. Is it great? Like, are you going to, do you want him to be your quarterback for the 10 years? Probably not.
Right.
you know, for the next 10 years, probably not. But he can give you like a middle of the league level of quarterback play, which, you know, ultimately could help you tread water and build a roster that's going to be good or better too, for whenever that young quarterback comes along.
I agree. Let's shift over in the division to the Dallas Cowboys, who actually right in the middle of this podcast.
All in, baby.
signed Ezekiel Elliott. So you know that they're trying to win. I have never seen such an incongruent message with action in terms of this Cowboys team. And to the point where I think it's wholly unfair for Mike McCarthy, who, yes, has a talented team, but is on a one-year contract where every day is one step closer to his last as the head coach of the Cowboys. Bill Belichick is looming, which we know has been a problem. Like, Bill Belichick looming is very similar to the weight of a situation that Sean Payton added to Los Angeles and Denver. And don't think that those guys didn't know that Sean, Nathaniel Hackett and Brandon Staley, don't think they didn't know that Sean Payton wanted those jobs, you know? And so you have all these dynamics. You still haven't paid Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, or Micah Parsons. Up to this point, your biggest free agent acquisition was like, or free agent spending was to re-sign your long snapper. And now all of a sudden, you're like, okay, here, we're going to replace Tony Pollard with Ezekiel Elliott, who was good last year, but now
he was
good,
but yeah.
How old is he?
He's a year older. This is going to be his ninth year, I think, right? Like, which is like a dinosaur for a running back. So, and I think you're right. Like, I actually like their draft. Like, I don't know. I look at it like,
I mean, Will McClay is good. Will McClay
has done a great job.
Like, he could be a really good GM somewhere else. And like, I would root for him to do so.
I mean, part of their problem is like that they have been so good at drafting, which limits what they can do with outside veterans because they have a lot of mouths to feed, you know? And like, that's why I thought the messaging was weird. Like, it was like last year, and I told people to be patient with them because last year they did something creative and they brought in Stephon Gilmore, right? Like via trade. And I thought maybe they've got a creative swing in them. What they didn't have was a lot of space to go and make some sort of big splash in free agency. And I love these things too, because it's like, and it's Jerry's own fault for saying he's all in. But, you know, I love when, and we're going to get into the, you know, fan part of this again, but like when people scream about their team being inactive in free agency, it's like, what do you want them to do? Like, who is out there that you just had to have, you know? I mean, I don't know. Like, and I look at the Cowboys and I'm like, hell yeah, I would rather spend the money on Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons than, you know, whatever was out there in March. But it's, again, it's Jerry's own fault for messaging this thing the way that he did, because when you use those words, all in, what everybody thinks is you're going to have like the 2011 Eagles offseason.
Which, in hindsight,
which, by the way, like the guy who coined the term dream team was actually the guy who was signed to be the backup quarterback,
Vince Young. I was there. That's right. Yeah. I was at that press conference. Oh my gosh. Nnamdi Asamoah was the ultimate ultimate signing of Nnamdi Asamoah. I think it was broken by our friend Jenny Vrentis to the Eagles, because we thought that Nnamdi was coming to the Jets, and we were on Nnamdi watch constantly.
I remember how crazy that was too. Nnamdi watch.
Nnamdi watch.
Cause that was the year, that was the lockout year. So like training camp was happening as free agency was happening. And I remember the one thing I remember is the Cowboys were in the mix. And I remember there was like a video that was floating around of like Rob of Jerry Jones walking over to Rob Ryan, and then like the two of them walking over to Jason Garrett, and it was like, oh my God, it's happening.
That.
He's signing. You know?
I remember that.
And the Eagles were out of nowhere too. Like the Eagles were legitimately the mystery team.
Right in the vein of the Phillies with what was it? Roy Halladay, Roy Oswalt, Cliff Lee. Yeah. They were the mystery team for Cliff Lee. Wasn't that it?
I think that's right. Yeah,
that was the mystery team for Cliff Lee. So I'm not asking Dallas to have that kind of offseason, but can you honestly tell me that, okay, you lose Dan Quinn, and even though you got Mike Zimmer, I don't think that you, like, there isn't really an upgrade from Dan Quinn as your defensive coordinator. It's hard to upgrade there. So I think you lost points there. You are static at offensive coordinator. Your Guyton, their first round draft pick, is a for the future move.
A bit of a project, yeah.
He's going to be a project. And so what did you do for yourself for right now outside of Ezekiel Elliott, which is, you know, so I don't know. That lingering draft question to me is still unresolved. Like,
I mean, the messaging to me is like, we're not that close, right?
Which is insane to think when you have like Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons.
Right.
Right.
I mean, like that's what it looks like. Cause if you look at it, it's like, and you know, you look at the way that they've been just unceremoniously dumped out of the playoffs by the Niners and the Packers the last few years. Like maybe that's part of the equation, you know. It's like, we can't break through and get to the NFC title game. The last time they were in the NFC title game, I believe, was their Super Bowl year of 1995. So it's been like legitimately a generation since they've got out of the round of eight. And, you know, like the last two times they've been eliminated from the playoffs, it's been like they got dusted, you know. So, I mean, part of it might be, it would be like, we're not that close. And we have to rebuild some things. And that would actually like match up with, they've gotten older in some spots. You know, like their offensive line obviously has gotten older, and they've had to rebuild that a little bit. I think Zach Martin's probably the last one left, right? Of like that great offensive line group that they had a few years ago. You know, obviously they had Gilmore to take care of like a hole there on the corner last year, but that was a Band-Aid. They have DeMarcus Lawrence on the defensive line. I mean, he's what, like, I think he's going into his 11th year. So some of that core that they've had for a long time has aged out. You know, Van Der Esch retired. So, and then Zeke, obviously, you know, now he comes back and he was part of that older core. So I do wonder if, like, internally, the more the more reasonable conversations than, like, Jerry Jones going on the Fan in Dallas are happening and saying, like, we do need to retool a little bit and get younger in some key spots. Cause that's what it looks like, that's what it looks like they're doing.
The Cowboys perpetually just remind me of like sort of like a cash grab. Like, you know, when your favorite aging artist does like one last tour, cause like they're out of money, or like they want to buy like an island or something like that.
Yeah.
And it always has that feel where it's like, we're more of a destination than a functional winning organization. Like, we're like Disney World. Like, it's not always going to be great, but you come for the prestige of it, you know. And okay, I'm always going to have like two or three stars around, and you're going to be able to look at them and
say you were there.
Yeah, say you were there and buy your Micah Parsons jersey, and then you're going to wave and take your picture, and then you're going to get out of there after popping $6,000 and putting it right in my pocket. And that's my feel of it. And to me, that hasn't changed, and it's hard for me to talk myself into the fact that it has changed post-draft.
I do wonder if, like, part of it, like, we could have the quarterback argument with them, too, because eventually it's like, I mean, I don't know. They've had really good rosters. You know what I mean? Like, so are they with Dak where, like, the Rams were with Jared Goff a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Right? And I believe Dak and Goff were the same draft class. I think that's right. So, like, are they at that point where it's like, God, can he elevate us? Can he get us to the next level? You know, I think it's a fair question to ask.
The other one here that feels unresolved, certainly, is the fact that the 49ers went into this draft possibly open to trading one or both of their big time starting wide receivers. That didn't happen. But now, And this has happened with San Francisco in the past, and I thought Kyle Shanahan was funny during his post-draft press conference where he was like, listen, if the 49ers get a good trade offer for me, they should do it, you know? And there is sort of that, like, flippant, like, this is all a bigger, you're making this a bigger deal than it is kind of thing, and he always has that attitude, you know? But can you imagine a situation where everybody just gets back on the same page, no hard feelings, and Brandon Ayuk is going to play without a new contract, which they clearly don't want to give him?
Yeah.
And so, you know, so what's going to happen there?
I've sort of changed my opinion on this a little bit. Like, now I've been saying for 3 or 4 months that Ayuk is the logical guy to move. They have just a I'd say a bottleneck. And again, this is like what we were talking about Dallas. Like, this is like a product of really good drafting and developing, but they have a bottleneck contractually coming. Like, and it's Bosa, it's Warner, it's Javarius Ward,
at some point you got to pay Brock Purdy.
Yeah, Trent Williams, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, who might want to raise, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. I looked at it and I said, like, okay, like, well, what would the most sensible thing be? Well, you look where they have a surplus, and it's what they did 4 years ago when they traded DeForest Buckner. They had a surplus there. Buckner had great value, trade Buckner, you know? And so they didn't love getting rid of Buckner, but that's where it was. And I sort of saw the same thing with Ayuk. I now think maybe it's more likely they trade Deebo than Ayuk. And I am not ruling out the idea that they sign Ayuk long term. And the reason why is because I think that Ayuk has become maybe a little bit more central to Kyle Shanahan's offense than Samuel is. Deebo's a really great player, but is he a luxury item?
Yes.
Ayuk is clearly your number one receiver, I think. You know, like, clearly the number one guy at that position. The guy who can beat man coverage, the guy who's a great route runner, the guy who checks, like, all the receiver boxes. Deebo's a great player in that, like, having him and Christian McCaffrey together is a nightmare for defenses, because when you break the huddle, you don't know where the two of them are going. But, like, if you have one that's got more value over the next 5 years, especially considering Deebo's injuries, wouldn't it be Ayuk? And if you can't trade Ayuk because another team doesn't want to give up a one and a $30, $35 million contract after what St. Brown and A.J. Brown got, well, then wouldn't it make sense to just pay him yourself and then maybe move Deebo, who's you know, expensive but cost controlled for the next 3 years?
It's also a product, too, of, like, if you're Shanahan, like, and again, I hate to do this, and John Lynch, but, like, in order to be successful in these environments, you have to have this sort of asset mentality, and you use Deebo Samuel like a running back, and that was part of his appeal. But now, you know, that contributes to injuries down the line, and then thus makes him less valuable for you in the long term. And it stinks.
It sucks, but, like, yeah, it's what it is.
But it is what it is, you know?
Right. You know, so I think, like, when you're looking at them and you're talking about how do we start to turn over our roster, I mean, like, Ayuk's, what, 24? Like, Ayuk could be there for the next, you know, 8-9 years.
Right.
You can't say that about Deebo. So, I don't know. And I look at it like, I think, like, the drafting Ricky Pearsall, like, gives them flexibility to keep looking, you know? And if things get weird with either of them, keep looking. If somebody's willing to come, like, and offer something good for either of them, you can think about it. I also think, like, the St. Brown, that the Amon-Ra St. Brown and A.J. Brown deals materially affect the ability of teams like the Niners to trade Ayuk and the Bengals to trade T. Higgins. It's just harder now because not only are you asking for premium draft capital, which will make it worth your while, you're also asking that other team maybe to pay these guys over $30 million a year, which is what you'd be asking for if you were one of them, seeing what St. Brown got in Detroit.
Good luck, Vikings, by the way, signing Justin Jefferson now, by the way.
Oh, I know. I mean, like, that's the other thing, though, is if you wait, if you keep waiting, like, that's going to be a problem, right?
It's stunning to me.
Like, teams never learn their lesson with it. Waiting never works.
No.
Like, no. That's what I think what the Eagles have done is so smart, where they get ahead of these things. Like, they paid Devontae Smith when? In, like, March?
Yeah.
Or February?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's consistent with them. They did it last offseason with Hurts. So Hurts was signed before Lamar, and it looked like a huge deal at the time, and it was, but, like, it happened before Lamar, it happened before Herbert, it happened before Burrow. I've heard stories that some owners want to keep that money in their pocket and in their investments for the extra, whatever, 6 months. It's asinine. Like, you wind up costing yourself so much if you do business that way.
Yeah. No, you're right. The one more quick kind of, and we'll call it unresolved in air quotes, for this one. It's more of a, I don't know, it's just more of an open-ended question, and then we'll get to our finisher. But the Jets, right? So you have, which is a team, by the way, that, you know, maybe they're the ones who look at Deebo Samuel at some point, and if they feel like that's a possibility for them, and maybe Woody Johnson gets involved there. I mean, that would be,
I like that fit.
That would be spectacular. That's where I thought
Woody would too.
Yeah, I think Woody would too. But you come out of the draft, and you get a tackle in the first round who if all goes well, you hope he doesn't start, right?
Right.
Or
I love that pick.
I loved it too. But he needs a year. I mean, at least the O-line coaches that I talked to felt like he needed a year.
Okay, so like I he had a rough last, like he had an up and down last year at Penn State. Like, and I know that that's out there. That is what it is. If he had come out after his junior year, like my understanding is he might have gone in front of Paris Johnson. Like he was that good 2 years ago. And so
it's like, almost like Derek Stingley, right? You know, it's a little bit like Derek Stingley, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I just think like a guy who is a true left tackle, right? Like a guy who can 100% fill that hole for you for the next 10 years, if he lives up to his potential, like to have that. And then, you know, the insurance policy it gives you with Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses. And maybe you move one of those guys inside the guard. Like, I don't know, maybe Morgan Moses can play guard. You know what I mean? Like if Olu really kills it, and now all of a sudden your offensive line looks completely different.
Yeah.
Like I know fans don't like it when, you know, somebody like Olu Fashanu goes over Brock Bowers or whoever else, you know, I'm sure the fans in New York would have loved to have seen Roma Dunze or someone like that. Like, I think this is where the Jets have gotten themselves in trouble in the past. Is that they've left themselves short at those positions. And, you know, I think Joe Douglas's commitment to getting that right was not only the responsible thing to do, but the right thing to do. Because you cannot count on 2 33-year-old tackles to be healthy the whole year. Maybe they will be, but you can't count. That's not a plan. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree. And I had the Jets trading up for a wide receiver because I thought that was like just what kind of mode that they're in. I'm happy to see them practicing patience. All that said, can you run it back with Garrett Wilson, who's going to get a very high volume of intermediate targets from Aaron Rodgers? Like, he's going to play a little bit like a running back because Aaron likes to get rid of the ball at the line of scrimmage if he's not comfortable and he doesn't see what he wants. These guys get hit quite a bit. And so did you do enough to upgrade the weapon set around him? Because what the Jets did during this draft was, okay, they got the Yak God in round three in Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. And then you went running back, quarterback, running back. I like that they have a developmental quarterback on the roster. I encourage them to do that pre-draft. I think that was a smart move. But you got two kind of bigger bodied, you know, 6 foot, 220 plus running backs. I get where you're going. This is similar to what the Packers did offensively. But do you have enough for him to throw to at that point? And was there an opportunity missed? Because this is a very, very deep wide receiver class. Could you have gotten back up maybe into the second round and made a move there?
Right. And so I would say, like, just a couple things on that. Like, I would say Mike Williams becomes a pretty important figure, right?
Right. So, and he's got to stay healthy. You know?
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, so Mike Williams becomes a very important figure here. The other thing is, like, I don't know. I think when you look at, like, the mosaic of it, like this is going back to why it was the right call. And the way that you approach the draft, there were a lot of teams that had those two needs, had a receiver need and a tackle need. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing my mock and going through it, I wound up having 7 tackles in the top 22. I don't know how close that was to the reality. I think it might have been 7 in the top 24. But the reason it happened was because I kept going through it. And I was like, you know, you try to like think like that team, you know, and combine that with what you've heard. And it's like, well, like, I think I can get a receiver in the second or third round. I don't think I can get a tackle in the third round.
Right.
So I better take care of the tackle now. And so, I mean, I don't know. Like, I watched a little of, you know, Malachi Corley played against Ohio State last year, so I did get to see him. And I sort of like it. Like, I think that there's something there. And so who are we to say that a second or third round receiver isn't going to work out? Like, we've seen it a million times.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, Mike Williams is an important figure. And I think, I wouldn't rule out Malachi Corley having a big year.
So, in the Jets being in the AFC pivots nicely to what I wanted to close the show on. And this is kind of the big all-encompassing thing that I think we need to really be thinking about. And you brought it up in our pre-show meeting. Did anybody get good enough to even come close to saying that they can take out the Chiefs. And I know, you know, okay, we are as guilty as anyone else. I mean, like, you know, last year, I think that I was probably a proponent of saying that the Chiefs looked a step slower. They looked more vulnerable than they have in the past. And of course, they just go on to win the Super Bowl anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that solidified for me this is Patriots 2.0. I mean, they're going to be there. They're going to be in the mix at the end of the season. That's how this works.
Yeah, like their
now.
Baseline's like, it feels like their baseline is the conference championship game, right?
Exactly. And so did anyone get to the point, and I'm looking at Buffalo, you're looking at Cincinnati, you're looking at Cleveland, you're looking at, I don't know.
Chargers?
The Charger, right? I mean, I don't know, right? Did any
don't
of these
rule out
teams,
the Rockford Files guy.
That's true. Did anybody get to the point where you thought that they closed the gap on the Chiefs just a little bit?
I mean, no. I just like look at it, and if you look at where the Chiefs are, like last year was sort of, the last 2 years have sort of been their transition years, right?
Right.
I mean, if you look at the way that the last 2 years have gone, they offloaded Tyreek Hill. They got a lot younger on defense, and now, you know, you look at their roster, and you know the rubber's going to hit the road on some of these guys. They're going to have to pay some of these guys soon, but you know the young core, like take Mahomes out of it, the young core on offense, you have, you know, you have Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith on the offensive line, who are two fantastic players. Rashee Rice, we'll see. He'll probably be suspended, but I think he's a long term guy for them. And then on defense, it's like, holy crap. Like it's George Karloftis, it's Nick Bolton. It's, you know, it's Trent McDuffie. Like it, you look at it and it's like the team should get better now. Like they have guys like who are key guys for them entering the prime of their career. And then you see what they did in the draft and it's like two very logical picks, a receiver and Xavier Worthy and a tackle and Kingsley. I'm going to try to pronounce his name correctly here. I have like the pronunciation guide up. Suamataia. Suamataia. Kingsley Suamataia. There you go.
I just call my guy Kingsley.
Who I watch him, but here's the thing with him. What you hear about him is super talented, immature, needs to grow up. And now he's going to Kansas City. What do you think is going to happen there?
I think he's going to grow up.
I think he probably will, right? Like based on the way offensive linemen have been developed there. So I don't know, Connor, like I feel like a year ago we were sitting here and we were like, the AFC is a murderer's row and Buffalo and Cincinnati and, you know, and Jacksonville is coming and the Chargers and man, like it's going to be tough for the Chiefs to repeat. I feel like we've sort of backslid there. To me, like the biggest threat might be Cincinnati.
I agree
because
with that.
I just think they're really good. And I think Burrow is a killer. And I think Burrow is the one guy who's capable of going into Arrowhead and staring down the Giant and punching him in the face, you know? And like, I still think the Bengals are probably the biggest threat to the Chiefs. And I think if Burrow stays healthy, like it's not the gutsiest pick in the world, but wouldn't that be your pick for the AFC title game right now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that's it. And so I like,
I mean, the Bengals had like a, I mean, from a draft pick standpoint, the Bengals, like I thought they did well too. I mean, they got Amarius Mims as like a potential long-term answer at tackle, and then they get a defensive tackle in the second round and Chris Jenkins, like where I think they probably would have taken Byron Murphy if he hadn't gone two picks ahead of them. And Chris Jenkins, by the way, you covered his dad just to make you feel old.
I know.
Yeah. But Chris Jenkins, I think could be a really good player as a three technique there coming out of Michigan. So I look at those two teams, like Cincinnati, and I look at Kansas City, I'm like, yes. Like, they are a stronger favorite this year than they were last year. They should be a strong favorite to three-peat, be the first team ever to do that in the Super Bowl era. And then, like, the top challenger is probably the team that's been the top challenger for the last 3 or 4 years when Burrow's been healthy, and that's the Bengals.
I don't know what... Because it's one of those, like, open-ended questions that we'll ask in our side of the business, and it's like, I don't know what anybody necessarily could have done now to make me feel that way. Now, if the Bills had traded up to 5 or the Bills had traded up to 4 and got Marvin Harrison Jr. and there's middle fingers everywhere, I'm like, okay, they're coming, you know? But I do think that there's something to be said for, you know, and we can bring it back full circle to the top of the show, which is that we can call and we can ask everybody, but there are parts of the plan that we're just not privy to until they come to light, right? And I do think that there is something to be said. My buddy Tyler Dunn, who did a show with us a couple of weeks ago, wrote this, that, you know, if you're Brandon Bean in Buffalo, for example, right, and we crush them for letting the Chiefs trade up to get their wide receiver. But there's also something to be said there for that attitude where it's like, yeah, come get him. We don't care. You know, we'll trade back and we'll get the guy that we like better. And they did. They got that kind of, you know, what if Keon Coleman is going to be that sort of Gabe Davis sort of big bodied contested catch guy, whatever it is. But, you know, maybe there are teams that just have things graded differently a little bit than we do. Maybe the Bills did close the gap and we don't know.
So 2 years ago when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl in the 22 season, I think it was, they had 10 guys they drafted and like nine of them were active for the Super Bowl, which means nine of the 46 guys who were active for the Super Bowl were draft picks. And a lot of them were playing a lot, like McDuffie, Karloftis. We've gone through the names. That's the point where Buffalo is right now. Like Buffalo is in this, our quarterback's on a big contract now. We need to reset the roster a little bit. We need to rebuild. We need to build a little differently. Our first core around our quarterback has aged out. And so, like, you know, it sounds simple, but it's true, and it's not easy to accomplish. Like, that's what the 24 Bills class has to be the 22 Chiefs class.
Yeah.
Right? So you have to hit on Keon Coleman, who had a fantastic opening press conference with the team. So he's already... I don't know if you saw that.
He had some good takes on when to buy clothes. He really did.
No question. Did a real solid for Macy's. I actually was thinking about going to Macy's after watching them. I think they maybe going to get myself a winter coat here in the next few weeks.
It's the perfect
Time's right, you know? And Cole Bishop, like the safety from Utah. Like, okay, like, so you're moving on from Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, who are bedrocks for Sean McDermott over the last 7 years. So, like, can Cole Bishop step in and be the guy right away? Like further down in the fifth round, the center they drafted, Cedric Van Pran-Granger from Georgia. Like, can he step in and take Mitch Morris's old spot? You know, the same way the Chiefs were able to, you know, rely on Humphrey and Trey Smith early in their careers. So I think that's where they're at right now. Is Buffalo is still in a good spot because they have the quarterback and they still have some really, really good core pieces. Guys like Deion Dawkins and Matt Milano and Ed Oliver, they've got good pieces, but now they're at the stage of the whole team building process where, all right, our quarterback's making real money now, and that means we've got to draft really well and get cheaper talent on the roster.
I guess it stands true what I said to Andy Reid at the Combine, I was just like, well, we'll see you at the Super Bowl next year. And, you know, it's kind of just what, you know, it's what you say to him at this point, you know? We'll see what happens.
If he won four with three in a row, do we have to have a real conversation? This is not for this podcast, but do we have to have a real conversation about him being in Belichick territory? I think we do.
I sense some summer content coming.
I put that right on the tee for you.
All right. Well, thanks to Albert for everything. Our producer, Shelby Royston, who is the best. We will be getting our second show, I believe, back up and running here on Thursdays within the next couple weeks as everybody comes and migrates into the new Sports Illustrated. I think you're going to hear some old favorites too on the podcast. I'm not naming any names. I'm not breaking any news. I'm going to keep it quiet, but I'm just saying.
You know something here?
Yeah. I'm saying that for real hardcore fans of the MMQB podcast, I think you're going to like the next few weeks. I think we're going to have a great summer. And so stick with us. The weather's getting nice. I'm about to fail to try to grow grass again for the 35th time. And let's talk about real football because it's happening. It's happening very soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.